Hello everyone, and welcome to the Superhero Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Marks. Today's episode is going to be a shorter one. We're going to talk about The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Now, this podcast is going to include full spoilers from both The Amazing Spider-Man and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. So if you haven't seen either film and don't want them ruined for you, pause this, go watch them, and then come back. Joining me today is Jamie Reeves. How are you?
Woo!
Jamie?
I'm good. How are you? Would you say that you are amazing?
The film has left me in a kind of bad place. It's I'm very traumatized by it. We'll talk about that more a little bit later. You've seen both films recently. What do you think about the series as a whole?
Well, I didn't originally see The Amazing Spider-Man 1 because it was too soon after the first trilogy. I thought they were pushing it a bit, maybe for more money.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the first two films of the trilogy, but obviously the third one wasn't very good.
Yeah, you can say that again.
It's worldly recognized that that's a bad film.
Definitely, yep.
But I was invited to see The Amazing Spider-Man 2, I decided to quickly watch the first one, and I thought it was brilliant. It was really well done, and it wasn't different just for the sake of being different. They actually had some new, interesting ideas, and I thought it was really good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I loved the first film. Everyone was like, it's super close to the previous films, do we really need this? And then I watched it, thinking, we really did need that. Looking back at the previous three films, they weren't that great. I mean, the second one I enjoyed a lot, but the first one and the third one weren't particularly great films. And
fair enough.
I think that at least with the cast and also tonally, the film The Amazing Spider-Man is just so much better.
Yeah. Well, obviously it's more similar to the comics, which you would enjoy.
It's not even that. I mean, yeah, there are more similarities to the comics, but just, I mean, for example, the way they portrayed Peter Parker, the way they got Andrew Garfield to portray him, seems much more sort of realistic. For example, he is not sort of nerdy in the sense that, oh, he's a comic book nerd, he likes to sit in his room and all that. But he's more sort of just socially awkward and doesn't really know how to deal with things. And he's really passionate about science. But the interesting thing that I think is more realistic is when he does get the spider powers, they sort of bring out a whole different side of him that makes a lot more sense than the way they did it in Spider-Man, which was...
I guess even before he had the powers, he was still acting a bit like Spider-Man, standing up to that bully and, like, getting the attention of Gwen.
Yeah, I mean, he's a bit of an idiot. But
I guess living with older people, it made him a bit of a social outcast, and he was a bit like he didn't have any friends.
But
I loved his like fascination with science. That's amazing.
That was awesome.
The web shooters that he invents.
Yeah, I mean, that was one thing that really bugged me about the previous three films. Was that they gave him biological web powers, and that was just weird. It didn't make much sense to me. I mean, me growing up on the Spider-Man animated series they had in the 90s, which was really good, and one of the like whole big things of that series, he was always running out of web fluid at just the wrong time. And so when they had all this biological stuff in the Spider-Man films, I was just like,
Fair enough.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, a problem which I kind of thought is in The Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2, they didn't bring much of the newspaper stuff, which I did enjoy about the first films.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember his name. The guy who played J. Jonah Jameson in the trilogy.
He was great.
He was great. Loved him. It was just really funny.
I enjoy the science a lot more, though.
Yeah.
Oscorp.
Definitely. And the Oscorp building's really cool anyway. Which film did you prefer? I mean, you've seen both of them now. Which do you think was better?
I much preferred The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Okay, your answer's different from me there. Okay, tell me why.
I really like The Amazing Spider-Man 1. I didn't have many problems with it. It's just that I thought The Amazing Spider-Man 2 was brilliant. It was such a good film. And even with the, like everyone said that the Spider-Man 3, which was the one that people didn't enjoy, was bad because they had too many villains. Mm-hmm. I mean, this one had even more villains, and on the poster, the slogan was "When enemies unite," I think.
Yeah.
And they had the three supervillains, but they did it so well. Mm. And like films such as like the X-Men,
yeah,
they managed to work so well with a huge cast. So I think The Amazing Spider-Man 2 did the three superheroes brilliantly, and I mean, it has action and it has like this Spider-Man story, but at the center of it all is the romance between Gwen and him.
Yeah,
which
I wrote about this. If you want to check out my review, shameless plug, on DB. Yeah, dbmmreviews.blogspot.co.uk. I wrote a review of The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And Mark Webb, the director, whose name is brilliant, I'm just going to put that out there. He is, in his past, the majority of his experiences as a director have been in sort of romantic comedies. And so the stuff between Peter and Gwen is done so well. And it's they're my favorite parts of the film. But it's really a credit to the creators of this film to say that they can have so many characters in this film, so many like big colorful characters, and not let that drag them down. You said you didn't particularly like the Avengers all that much. Do you think they handled multiple characters in this better?
Well, my slight dislike of the Avengers is a bit of a different thing. I personally find the more childish, because as a child I didn't read comics and I didn't watch much superhero stuff. I love the darker sort of superhero films. My favorite superhero stuff being Batman, which is obviously inherently a dark kind of thing.
Well, unless and you're talking about the TV
show, holy whack, Batman. No, Christopher Nolan is my favourite Batman stuff, and the games are very dark.
Definitely.
A lot of struggle with killing people and stuff. Mm. And the X-Men series movies, they're brilliant. They're my favourite things ever, and they're very dark. A struggle between like a lot of real-world problems, such as like dealing with being gay and the Holocaust and a lot of stuff like that, racism, and they work it so well. So also that was a problem with the first three Spider-Man films.
Oh yeah, they were super cheesy.
Yeah, and I guess that's why I didn't really like Avengers that much.
Yeah,
I mean, they are forcing the childish stuff a bit too much to appeal to 8-year-olds and stuff.
Yeah, I get it.
And that is why I like Amazing Spider-Man 2 so much, because of the Gwen.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I get that, but in a sense, I would have, God, that movie. I would have thought then you would have liked the first one more, considering, I mean, at least as a whole film, it was a lot darker in tone. I mean, not necessarily in terms of what happened in the film, but the way it was presented, especially the way they dealt with Peter's reaction to Uncle Ben dying. Spoilers. But I mean, the reason I liked the first one more, I mean, I felt it was a little bit darker, but just it was a lot more charming to me. It had a lot more of its own sort of character, whereas the second one, I felt it was a little bit more like the original trilogy.
Oh, fair enough.
Especially because they like, with the color palette as well, I don't know whether you noticed this, but, like, the entire film, it was a lot brighter and a lot more sort of garish. I mean, they changed the Spider-Man suit, and it's a lot more, you know, primary colors instead of sort of the darker stuff they had in the first one, which I personally liked a lot more.
Fair enough. I guess in the first film, it was setting up how he dealt with his, like, loneliness and, like, just being a loser and nerd. And then once he gained all this popularity, like, once he... And he loved it, like the trailers. I love being Spider-Man and him swinging between the buildings.
I mean, I have to say the sort of action sequences were so good.
Yeah.
Really, really exciting stuff. And especially sort of, you know that bit where the guy who would eventually become the Rhino is standing there with a machine gun spraying bullets at him, and he's just sort of like twirling around the bullets and flying past him, just like, yes.
I guess what they were doing in the second one is letting him be cocky, letting him enjoy being Spider-Man, and then throwing three supervillains at him and then killing his girlfriend.
That was, we'll talk about the ending more a little bit later, but I'm so traumatized by that. you remember, because we saw the film together, I was sitting there as she was falling, going... Oh, I had my hands on my head and I was just sort of like, no, you're not doing this. Please don't do this. And they did it, and it was horrible. I mean, I looked it up afterwards. The scene where she dies in the comic, she's wearing the same clothes as she was in the scene where she died in the film. And I should have noticed that. I thought about it afterwards, and I'm just like,
I haven't... I haven't read any of the comics, but it was like there was like a feeling of just total despair and like hopelessness when she was falling, and he did that so well, the director, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and, that scene in the comics. I haven't read it either, but that is such an iconic moment. It was one of the first truly dark moments in the Spider-Man series, and it was really, really shocking for fans, from what I gather. And it had the same effect here. Because, I mean, everyone knows they kill off Uncle Ben. That's, like, the first thing they do in...
I didn't care about Uncle Ben.
Exactly. I mean, it's like, the moment he appeared on screen, I'm like, well, he's doomed. But, like, killing off the girlfriend, and one who is so much... is such a well-developed character and such a likable character.
Yeah.
It's not something you would expect to happen unless you knew it was going to happen.
I like that it wasn't Mary Jane, which was weird. I thought she was always his girlfriend.
Mm, yeah, I mean, the annoying thing about Mary Jane, they never really develop her as a character. I mean, it's always, she wants to be an actress, but she's not very good at it. Oh dear. Also, she has sex with Spider-Man a lot.
And she cheats on him with James Franco.
yeah, that happens a lot. But they did cast Mary Jane, and originally she was supposed to be in this film. She's being played by Shailene Woodley, of Divergent and The Fault in Our Stars fame.
Oh, is she going to be in the third film?
I would expect so. I mean, they recorded stuff for her for the second film, but they cut it out at the last minute.
Oh, fine.
Which was a little bit surprising, but, you know. I guess. I suppose they wanted to put the focus a lot on Gwen.
Yeah. Well, you can't replace Gwen.
No, there's this gift set that goes around Tumblr a lot, and it's of Emma Stone being interviewed about her role as Gwen and about Mary Jane as a character, and she's always like, "Oh, Gwen is so much more special, and Mary Jane is a skank, and Peter loves her, and he loves her." And it's just one of my... It's just, yes, I completely agree. It makes a lot more sense that Peter and Gwen would be together than the other way around.
Well, I like the thing with her dad in the first film. It was, like, dealing with, like, how in the second Batman film, like, he had to deal with being hated by the police... Like, they managed to do that really brilliantly well, but also give nice closure at the end with his death.
And
that was also pretty dark.
Because when he says, stay away from her, because something bad's going to happen, and then he was right.
Yeah.
And, Gwen, I'm really sad. I was in a really bad mood for the rest of the day after we left the cinema. I was just sort of like, why did they do this? I mean, I know why they did it, but why?
I mean, it sounds bad to say I'm glad that she died,
you know,
but it worked very well.
There's a really good, it's done really well, it's handled very well, and I think it's going to, despite the fact that Emma Stone's not going to be in it, which is a shame, but it's going to make the next film a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
Because if it was just going to be, you know, another sort of romance story with Gwen, I think it would sort of lose its charm a little.
Yeah, yeah.
But now it's, I think the next one's going to be super dark. And especially since Andrew Garfield, he's only signed on to do 3 films. And they're planning to do 4. So, I think they're going to kill him off.
I think it mirrors the Batman trilogy quite, like,
yeah,
closely.
Yeah, you said the other day.
Yeah, in the first film, they set up him becoming a superhero. And his parents die at a very young age, and someone else dies to cause them to want to become a superhero. And then in the second film, like, the whole thing is he's struggling, dealing with being a superhero, but also paying attention to his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then his girlfriend dies at the end.
Yeah.
Rachel in the Batman series and Gwen in Spider-Man. And a lot of the problem I had with the last Batman film is that he didn't die. I mean, it sounds bad to say that I wanted him to die.
It would have been a better ending if he had died.
Yeah.
And it would have, I think I would have liked the film more, because I had a problem with the third Dark Knight film. I just didn't like it nearly as much.
It
bothered me a lot. But I think that if they handle the third Spider-Man film better, coming back from a dark place like that Peter's in at the moment could be a really good way to demonstrate his character a lot more.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we move on to sort of the next topic of conversation, there's a matter of the after credit scene, the lack of it. that X-Men thing they had in the credits.
That's so exciting.
I know, it's really exciting, but it was confusing because 2 completely different studios here.
Yeah.
It's a Spider-Man film, which is made by Sony. And then in the middle of the credits, where you'd expect there to be like a proper after-credit scene from the Spider-Man films about alluding to what's going to happen next, they have a clip from the new X-Men film, which is made by Fox. And a lot of people are sort of making up these crazy theories that this is because they're going to do a
crossover. Oh, in the same universe.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
It would be awesome, but it's never going to happen. I mean, there was IGN did an interview with 2 of the creators from The Amazing Spider-Man 2, and one of them mentioned that, I mean, it's all too possible that a crossover between these studios could happen, but he said it would only happen once everyone's run out of ideas. And I think that makes a lot of sense to me, but I mean, they're kind of sort of wasting the talent they've got now, because the people that they have playing these characters aren't going to be playing them forever. And if they do eventually run out of ideas, it's not going to be for a while. And all of the people they've got involved in the films probably won't be at that point. People like Robert Downey Jr., he won't be Iron Man anymore. Andrew Garfield won't be Spider-Man. Hugh Jackman probably won't be Wolverine. And these are, like, pretty iconic people playing iconic characters. Do you think they could pull off a crossover?
I don't think they should do it, to be honest. I mean, there's enough characters in the X-Men universe already.
Yeah, and they have all of these crossovers already going on at Marvel Studios.
I just like to see a trailer for X-Men, to be honest.
Yeah, that was... Oh, it was really cool. That sequence... was epic.
J-Law. Oh my god. In an army suit, looking badass.
That film is going to be so good. Well, I hope it is. If it is, yeah. I'm going to be very disappointed.
Well, they're going to flop at some point and then just stop making them.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens. They don't stop making them because they can't be bothered anymore. It's just because one of them has not made enough money. Or it's just completely bombed. Okay. Last little thing. The spin-offs that they're planning to do. Sony are trying to make a cinematic universe out of the Spider-Man franchise. they are planning on making two more main storyline Spider-Man films, plus a Venom spin-off and a Sinister Six spin-off.
That's awesome.
The question is, with films like Venom and Sinister Six, how do they go about doing that? Because if they were to involve Spider-Man in it, who would the film be from the perspective of? Because it was, if it were from the perspective of Spider-Man, then it would just be another Spider-Man film. But if from the perspective of the Sinister Six, how do they make Spider-Man look like a villain? Or do they even involve Spider-Man at all?
I love new kind of ideas about when making films or books. And I see very few books or films where it's actually from the perspective of a bad guy.
Yeah.
Maybe they should try that.
It would be nice.
Obviously, they're not going to spend a lot of money on it.
And they'd have to take a lot of risks. It's not the sort of... Films like that aren't really the sort of films that you can market to kids. Because if you are taking it from the perspective of a bad guy, it's going to be darker.
I don't want it to be for kids. I want it to be for me.
That's all well and good. And to be honest, they'd probably benefit from targeting it at an older audience. The only problem is, the vast majority of their money is made from kids who like superheroes.
Yeah, but I want to see a good movie.
That's fair enough, but again, are they going to take the risk?
Probably not. So will they, like, make it so they're good?
I don't know. I mean, I suppose... I mean, have you seen... This is I can't remember who made it, but it's an animated film called Megamind. Have you seen it?
Yes, and then it turns out Megamind is good at the end.
Yeah. Sort of the way they did that was they had a guy who was trying to be super evil, and then he teamed up with a good guy to beat an even more super evil person. I mean, I suppose they could do that, and that would maybe lead into a Venom film if they had the Sinister Six teaming up with Spider-Man to beat Venom. Or maybe to beat the Green Goblin, who's gone crazy or something. but I don't think that would be as interesting.
Yeah, I think they should try and take some risks. I mean, they have the money.
Okay. Right. Speaking of villains, last thing before we finish. You've read my review, or you know what I wrote in my review.
Yeah, I know your opinion.
Yes. I didn't like Electro, or at least the direction they went with Electro. But you did. I mean, let me explain what I thought. I mean, they pushed very hard for Electro to be a super sympathetic character. But in the end, I felt he ended up more as just Green Goblin's lackey, and he was kind of more creepy than he was sympathetic. What do you think?
I really liked Electro as a character. I mean, I disagree with you on that.
Why did you like Electro?
Well, they were definitely pushing, like, parallel stories between Electro and origin story and Spider-Man's origin story.
Yep.
For example, like, how he was a loser and an outcast, Peter Parker, and he wanted to stand up for what was good, but he didn't have the power, and then he had an accident at Oscorp. And then he got these superpowers, which helped him become Spider-Man. And he loves being Spider-Man, and it lets him do good.
Yeah.
And he has the web shooters, which are non-lethal, and all these things that help him be a good guy.
I think what separates Electro from that, though, which I didn't like so much, was Electro's tagline in the trailer and in the film as well, is he just wanted to be seen. Whereas Peter just wanted to do the right thing. And I think what eventually turned Electro into a villain was because he was selfish about it. Also the way Spider-Man handled it, but that's not the point.
I think that is
Electro
very...
Electro was sort of, I want to be like Spider-Man and be like super popular with all the people so people will see me. And I don't think that was the way to approach it, and
I think
freaked me out a lot.
I think he wanted to do exactly the same thing as Spider-Man. I mean, by the second film, Spider-Man's real cocky. He's going up to random people in the street and saying, I need you. And that eventually folds back on him when Electro gets these powers by getting bitten by some eels or something.
Do you reckon that's how he's going to get Mary Jane? Just going to swing up to her in the street and go...
No, he gets these powers, and he is exactly through very similar circumstances to Spider-Man, and he goes out in the street, and unfortunately, his powers, rather than letting him do good in a very similar way to Spider-Man, it hurts people. I mean, there's no way that electricity shooting out of your arms can help people. And he doesn't do anything before some guy takes a sniper shot at his head.
That's true.
And I guess Spider-Man, Peter Parker, also to some extent just wanted to be seen. I mean, one of the first things he did when he got his powers is went out with Gwen.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. But the other thing is that separates Spider-Man from Electro. And
is that he's completely insane.
Yes, that. But, I mean, and Captain Stacy sort of touched upon that in the first film, where they were like, we don't know what he looks like, he wears a mask. And that, I think that's what separates them. Spider-Man wears a mask because he doesn't want to endanger those around him, and because he does, inherently, I don't think he does want to be seen. I mean, he wants Spider-Man to be seen, he wants the symbol to be seen, another parallel between him and Batman, but he doesn't want to be seen himself. And that's what bothers me about Electro. I mean, I get that's the point of the character, but again, they tried to make him super sympathetic, and he just ended up being really, really creepy. That whole scene where he was pretending that Spider-Man was his best friend and he baked him a birthday cake. That was just weird.
I guess if Spider-Man was in Oscorp and then tripped over a pole and fell into a big tank full of eels, and then he stumbled out in a daze and accidentally electrocuted some people.
Yeah, I get that would probably drive him crazy.
Electro had these mental illnesses, and they were just increased by the fact that Spider-Man wronged him in this way.
Yeah.
And I guess the only opportunity there was to team up with Green Goblin as he was captured. Mm-hmm. And, Green Goblin practically forced him.
Yeah.
He was a victim of a situation, and I think that's what makes him sympathetic.
Fair enough. Okay. You said you had a theory about the villains.
Oh, this is a bit weird. I mean, I was on the bus on the way home, and my phone ran out of battery from the movie, so I had a lot of time to think about it. And my theory is that the three supervillains in this film represent Peter's biggest fears. Mm-hmm. Like, Peter, as a loser and a nerd, no friends, very similar to Electro's story. And through becoming friends with Gwen, he manages to beat Electro.
Yeah.
And his powers as Spider-Man helped him overcome, his fears of being alone and being a loser.
Okay.
Physicalized in his killing or destruction of Electro. Mm-hmm. And his second fear, which came from this gaining of Gwen, was losing Gwen. That's a big part of the film. And I think this was shown through Green Goblin, uh-huh. as Harry Osborn was one of his biggest friends when he was a kid, but Harry was taken away from him as he went off to boarding school. So the Green Goblin represented his fear of losing friends or girlfriend, and he lost this fight as Gwen was killed.
Yeah.
And his final fear, as such a dark thing happened, Gwen breaking her neck as falling down inside a clock tower, was losing his childhood, which was also represented in the film becoming very dark. And he didn't dress up as Spider-Man, and he didn't stop any crimes for ages after Gwen died. And he sort of overcome this losing his childhood by facing the Rhino. Because as the Rhino was, like, sort of walking down the street, a kid, like, dressed up as Spider-Man walks out in front of Rhino and is like, stop. And
that
then the
seems
Rhino's
a bit ridiculous.
And the Rhino, who previously was there when Spider-Man was acting really childish, like, he sort of, after tying him up with the webs, he, like, pulled down his pants and said something, like, witty.
Yeah.
Sort of, Spider-Man ran out and sort of came back from being sort of really dark and alone, and saved this child, or saved his childhood and his happiness. So the three supervillains represented his biggest fears, and he managed to win the one being about being a no one, lose the one about losing his friends and his girlfriend, but he came out victorious as he saved his happiness and his childhood.
Best out of three. Okay. Right, we seem to have come to the end of the show. Thank you, okay. Jamie, for joining me.
You're welcome.
Now, as you probably realise, we haven't done a podcast in a while. This is because we're all super busy at the moment with exams, but towards the end of the summer, we will be back for a special episode in which we will talk about the four big superhero films of the year, so that's Captain America the Winter Soldier, which I've also reviewed and is up on my blog, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Guardians of the Galaxy, and X-Men Days of Future Past. After that, I would like to resume a more regular schedule, but unfortunately I can't really promise anything. In the meantime, I will continue to write reviews on my blog, and if you have any questions for us, email them to dbmmpodcast@gmail.com, and we will endeavour to answer them on the next podcast. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.